This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Look, I've been used to being called potato head from them for the last 20 years. I think I always took it as a bit of a compliment.
When I go home late at night, this is a song that I really like to sing right now, so I'll play it for you. It's called My Old Man.
This is the voice of your god, Randy Lerner. First McLeish, then came Bruce. What next, River Francis?
Welcome, villains, to the My Old Man Said podcast show, probably the most fun that you can have as a Villa fan at this moment in time. I'm David Michael, the editor of myoldmansaid.com. So, what's been going on since last we spoke? A new manager, unfortunately same results. We've even eclipsed the drawing achievements of Alex McLeish, which is saying something. Although, of course, it's early days for Steve Bruce, but one thing is for sure, I think he knows he's got a bit of a job on his hands. On this show, we'll try to get to the bottom of what is going on at Villa in terms of why are these players underperforming. We'll also talk about Steve Bruce, and as well as answering listener questions, we'll also focus on Ross McCormack, a key to potentially getting this team up and running again. There'll be 5 reasons to be cheerful as usual, and throughout the show there'll be a few Villa guests popping up. Thanks as always to the Mom's patrons, and a shout out to Rick Lawrence who joined this week. If you want to become a Mom's patron, head over to myoldmansaid.com and check out Patron on the menu bar. If we get a few more patrons sign up, we'll start doing an extra podcast show in the week. Okay, villains, let's get down to claret and blue business. And joining me this episode, Dan Rogers from the Villa Underground, and also My Old Man Said writer, Chad Wren. How you doing, gents?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks.
Really well, thank you. A couple of days at the Masters, topped off by an evening of entertainment at Villa Park.
Ooh, which was the best, Masters or Villa Park? Do I even have to ask?
Well, entertainment and experience, I'd have to say the Masters. Let's put it like that.
How many days is the Masters over?
4 days.
Can you imagine having to go to Villa Park 4 consecutive days?
Wow.
It'd be 4 draws.
In the current climate, yeah, 4 draws. I hope, for example, the American influence in the game doesn't become so much that a game is quarterized over 4 days. That would be just too much punishment. So the last week or so over the international break, it's been a bit of a management merry-go-round, not only with England, with Gareth, ex-villain Gareth Southgate coming in, Although, did any of you actually bother to watch England? Because I don't watch them anymore unless it's in the actual tournament itself, World Cup or Euros. Anybody watch England over the international break?
I did, just because I was bored. Wanted to go down the pub, good excuse.
So you watched England because you were bored?
Yeah, it's sort of, it's a...
How did that one work out for you?
It made me even more bored. It just made me depressed, actually. Seeing Wayne Rooney just spray it all side to side.
Yeah, I haven't really kind of got an opinion on the whole Wayne Rooney thing. I just assume he's older now and he's kind of faded, and that's about as far as the argument goes. If he's not good enough, just get rid of him.
It's just day or uninteresting football, isn't it? And, you know, we've got Mr. Charisma Gareth Southgate in charge now. Major upgrade on Roy Hodgson.
I mean, as we found out in the latest Villa management saga, there just isn't that many great managers in the pool to choose from every time. I mean, for example, Steve McClaren going popping up again at Derby was a bit of a laugh. And then you've got this merry-go-round where Big Sam or Steve Bruce, pretty much you could sum them up, no disrespect to them, but as managerial journeymen who were like 6-7 out of 10 kind of caliber, always will pop up and get the job. But now those two have floated to the top of the tree where they're getting the England job for one game only. Also now the Aston Villa job. But what was your first impressions of Bruce coming in? I think when we recorded the last podcast, we pretty much expected him to walk through the doors at Villa Park, but you know, it wasn't obviously 100% at that time. So I think we all had reservations, but just quickly, you know, just your initial thoughts on the actual appointment, not what he's done so far.
Well, he's gonna need time, isn't he? And I think after the Wolves game, you see what a big task that he's gonna have on. If there's a guy who, of all those candidates we went through last week, he's got the track record to get teams out of the division. We're gonna need that, but a lot's gonna hinge on personnel, I think.
And Chad,
I was initially happy. I'd probably say, to be honest, you get caught up in all that vibe that it's sort of a fresh start. New managers come in, you expect everything to change. Yeah, I was just happy. I don't know what. Just, it's sort of the sight of seeing Blues fans run scared and things like that. That was probably my favourite bit.
Where are they running to?
Promotion.
Yeah, into the hills of promotion.
Nine, nine, nine. Hello, this is Herr Wagner of Huddersfeld. Ich bin calling to politely decline your kind offer of a job at Aston Villa. Herr Westwood? Ach ja, I wanted to make beautiful football with Westy. Ach, but oh God, und Houghton? Und Angel Gabriel Agbonlahor? Have you seen those photos of Flabby Gabby? No way.
Moving to the Wolves game, and we almost had a 360-degree view of the Aston Villa-Wolves game. We had Dan in the Holt end. I was checking out the Trinity end on somebody's season ticket, and Chad was in the North Stand. Would have had somebody extra in the Doug Ellis, but I refuse to entertain that stand while that name is on it. But Bruce's introduction, it was kind of, it's not like a returning hero or a champion or Sir Lancelot turning up. It was more like, it was good luck with this, mate.
Thanks for coming, wasn't it?
Thanks for coming. We've got our fingers crossed for you. Wolves, the performance, I mean, I was mad at the first half against Newcastle. I was pretty much almost equally mad at the second half against Wolves. Was you frustrated in the fans around you?
Most certainly, especially in the second half. It's just the fact that we didn't have any sort of attacking intent whatsoever again. And even though they were forced substitutions, you heard around the ground everyone calling for Gisted to come on and just to put a striker on, because it's a bit of a shame that we look so clueless without a striker on the pitch, without like a sub-striker coming into the game.
Unfortunately, I think Bruce had his hands tied because, you know, two players went off injured and he had to do kind of like-for-like swaps. I think that kind of compromised what he could do to actually change the game.
It's a shame that McCormack and Codger couldn't step up themselves to change the game, and that's probably what frustrated fans the most, but yeah.
A lot has been said about the fitness, and Steve Bruce saying I'm not actually pointing this at Steve Bruce per se, but there's bigger problems than fitness. And first of all, I think this whole fitness thing is a bit of a myth. I mean, I wrote something on myomansaid.com regarding
how pretty much in the last five or six years, seasons, the new Villa manager has said exactly the same thing. Julia said the same thing about Martin O'Neill's team, which was a bit strange because Martin O'Neill's team was pretty, I think it was one of the best teams in the Premier League for actually winning points from losing positions, which suggests in terms of like stamina within games, Villa were pretty hardy in that respect. So I don't think there was that many problems with fitness. I think Julio probably just looked at Richard Dunn and thought,
that diet of Guinness and pies wasn't the makings of a professional Premier League defender.
No. So
who knew?
So Julio brings in, and the name escapes me, but I think Remy Gard also brought him in.
Ah, he was the same guy, wasn't he?
Yeah, it was the same guy who was known to be this real ball-breaking fitness chap. So fast forward a few months, or well, actually a season, and Alex McLeish comes in, and the first thing he does is publicly announce that the Villa players need to get their fitnesses up in pre-season to kind of justify their selection, because he also had doubts over the fitness. Fast forward, Remy Gard says exactly the same thing at the Tim Sherwood team he inherits. Fast forward again, Steve Bruce says exactly the same about Di Matteo. So there seems to be a trend here that the staff at Bodymore haven't caught on that everybody's unfit, or it's just essentially just this kind of, I don't know what to call it, like a neutral excuse where it deflects off the players and the present manager is kind of blaming the old regime, which is obviously gone now. But come on, they're professional footballers. They're getting paid five figures, and a lot of them are doing, you know, a lot of them have got external fitness coaches, and to suggest they're not fit enough, you know, I don't buy it. What do you think?
I think I'd buy it in part. I think you look across our team and you can see players who I don't think have got 90 minutes in them. I do think that you look at how we play and you compare it to some of the teams we've come up against. Wolves is a good example, because other teams seem to get the ball to our final third in a completely different way to how we're trying to do it. We're trying to carry the ball out all the time or trying to find a lone guy. Other teams seem to break in twos and threes down the channels, you know, very traditional way of playing football. We don't seem to, you know, the ball always seems to be at the feet of someone like Grealish, who's still in our own half, and with one or two passes on and three or four opposition defenders in front of him. Chad was saying we don't have any creativity. I think we seem to hit the wall. We come out with a game plan and then we lose our way, and then we hit the hour mark, and I think stamina and lack of ideas. Yeah. We just fall apart, really.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of, sorry, just going back to the fitness quickly. I mean, obviously there was, you know, one or two players like Jedinak did not look fit in any shape or form. And to be honest, he's looked like he's been perpetually jet lagged while he's been at Villa.
I've done some figure work on Jedinak, if you're interested.
Yeah, go for it.
Well, assuming he's been away for a week, which I think he has been, I make it that he'll have been flying from, so there's 168 hours in a week. He'll have been flying for 55 hours.
Wow. And that's just the latest trip, isn't it?
That's just this trip.
Before it was even more chronic, wasn't it? Because he flew to Australia and
he went to the UAE. But that's what the killer is, because the way that the Australian internationals work is they play one domestic one and one overseas one. So this one was the same. So he was in Jeddah, and then I didn't realise how far Jeddah was from Adelaide. It's 17 hours flight.
That's insane.
It's mental. So
maybe you should retire from international duty.
Well, that's what I was kind of hoping when he sang for Villa, because surely the fashionable phrase due diligence would have been done on his international schedule. I mean, I viewed the Jedinak purchase as like the main man for the Villa midfield. He was the man who was going to sort out our flimsy midfield. Yet when you look at his schedule and what he actually has to go through on international week, he's knackered for the next week after he's got back.
Well, the crazy thing about that journey out there is, I mean, by all accounts, he played really well against Japan. In Australia, he captained the team and he scored the equaliser. You know, it's no excuse, because he was dog rubbish at Villa Park against Wolves. There's no getting away from that. But he got off a round the world flight the morning before. if there's one glaring error, I mean, the fact that it was Bakuna and Ayew weren't picked on the basis of having been on long haul flights. Why was Jedinak put in?
Yeah, he did comment afterwards, Bruce, saying that it was a mistake from himself. But man, that probably shows you how he would rate him over Westwood.
Yeah, no, Bruce did stick his hand up and say it was his mistake. But as you said, he was probably just frightened by the other options.
Mm. Well, I don't imagine a player who's arriving back off international duty where the manager's changed, he's not going to be arriving at the manager's door saying, "I don't fancy see this one, boss. You know, you can't make a worse first impression. Well, so you're almost relying on your boss saying, hang on, sit this one out.
It's probably the type of character Jednak is as well. I don't think he'd ever be the sort of person to do that.
He's not like John Carew, who used to say, I don't think I'm feeling fit for this one, boss.
but that strip club night's still on.
G'day, villains. Welcome back to Jednak's Jungle. Struth, I'm playing like a real Brett Holman. So bad I got swapped for a Westie. What a crock. But my predictions came right. Bruce was lurking out in the outback all along. He's emerged a beautiful lean specimen after a period out in the wild. Crikey, what a beauty he's become. Mate, listen, he's going to need all of his experiences if he's to survive this ass ripper.
The reason why I don't think it's a fitness issue is what you alluded to earlier on. It's just, you know, people have said, well, you know, Bruce has only had 2 days to put this team together and, you know, rule the roost over them. But, you know, we're not talking about Steve Bruce here per se at the moment. We're talking about the fact that these players have had 12 games playing together, yet they look like absolute strangers on that pitch. And when one player gets the ball, as you said, he's hardly got anything on. And 9 times out of 10, he's surrounded by 2 or 3 players without anybody coming to his aid. They're standing there, hands on hips, or jogging into the box, you know, basically saying, beat those 3 men, get it over to me. There's no support. There's no little triangles. They're not attacking as a wave, as in a unified force.
The thing that's probably most telling for me is the type of football they switch from. Like you said, it might not be a fitness issue because of the fact that when we play well, we get the ball down and we pass it. When we play poorly, we just start launching it, and Codge is never going to win a header. And our best spells in games, when we get on top of them, is when we, even if it's aimless passing, but at least we keep in the ball and then we start to move on and find gaps. And McCormack and Grealish's little link-up play, but then that just disappeared and faded out. And I don't know why.
Yeah, I mean, that little link-up play was, I think it was like, what, there was a patch of about 5 or so minutes in the kind of early first half where you thought, oh, hang on a minute, it's, you know, they're playing with freedom and, you know, this could get interesting. And then I don't think McCormack or Grealish played another ball to each other for the whole game.
Now, they do seem on different wavelengths, don't they? And it was a similar... We've seen this so many games where you think, why can't we match periods of intensity that other teams seem to put us under? You know, Wolves, for how they didn't win the second half yesterday is... I can't get my head around it, to be honest. It was...
The referee, probably.
The referee was... I mean, people talk about clown attacks at the moment. That guy was on having an absolute mare from start to finish. I don't know what to say. We've seen enough football between us now to know that it's not all about fitness. It's having the confidence, and you start debating ridiculous things like, oh, such and such low on confidence, or is they not... You know, but again, they're professional footballers. They train all week. They know after 12 games, they've got to know one another's strengths and weaknesses. Why are we leaving players like Codger so isolated? Or when we do choose to use him, why are we lumping it up at chin height at him?
Or when we're under intense pressure, why do we keep giving the ball to Sissoko? Things like that. Like, give it to someone who could hold on to the ball.
So many times as well where we got possession, both the first and second half, and Richards was guilty of this on one or two occasions. He'd win the ball after a period, because Wolves were very good at holding the ball and moving it across the middle, I noticed. Yeah. And we would just kick it back to them. And you think that's rudimentary professional footballer training. You know, if there is such a thing, that, you know, you've got the ball, you've worked bloody hard to get it back. Don't just lump it back to a yellow, a gold shirt. That was the frustrating thing when we did come to attack. It's a similar thing that we dally, and this is something that I've noticed creeping into Grealish's game. He'll pick the ball up, he'll come inside, he'll take another touch, and it allows the opposition to regroup.
Mm. Yeah. Speaking of a difference between attitude between Wolves and Villa in the game, I noticed when Villa defended a corner, as they did with Di Matteo, had nobody up at the centre circle for an out ball. Mm-hmm. When the roles were reversed and Wolves were defending a corner in the second half, especially towards the end of the game, they left 2 guys up. So Villa had to think about that and obviously leave more men back. Mm. And it obviously neutralised, you know, the threat of Villa in the box. But also, it was more productive for their, you know, counter-attacks. Once that ball came out and was released, they had 2 guys up there to actually forge and get something going. And all... all it does with leaving nobody up there is just by a preset, you're defending very deep. The ball comes out, it's going straight back to Wolves, it comes straight back in. So the pressure is just, you know, is relentless in the end. What else can you say about that Wolves game? We didn't have a shot on target in the second half.
I think if there's one positive to take, it's laid it bare for Bruce that it's, I think it was Chad mentioned that, maybe it was yourself, David, at the beginning of this podcast, where the game, the first half was as bad as the Newcastle game. If there was a difference between the two, we were even worse in the second half. And you think, how can that be possible? how can we not fathom a shot on our own pitch over 45 minutes of football? And that's just, are we overcomplicating it? Or actually, how bad are we?
Yeah, I mean, going back to that fitness thing, if somebody's saying, well, the thing is, they were buggered from the second half, the start of the second half. So you're telling me that they can only last the first 45 minutes? That's rubbish, because against Newcastle, they finished really strong. So that's another piece of evidence that this fitness thing is, it's a bit of a myth, and also, it's a bit of an excuse just to kind of probably deflect from the fact is it's really a tactics thing. And also, the players just don't seem that kind of motivated. I mean, there is another contrast when you look at the Huddersfield game, which always impressed me, the first, let's say, hour of it, where the Villa players were closing down, they were getting tight. There was a hell of a lot of effort in there. And then that intensity probably, obviously you're going to tire from that intensity, and Huddersfield made a few changes to get themselves back into the game with substitutes and whatnot. But this game, they weren't anywhere in the second half. So it's not, it's not like they tired at the end. From 45 minute onwards, they were just non-entities. Before we started this game, we actually slipped into the relegation zone. I looked at that game and I was expecting a response. The new manager bounce, where the players are obviously playing to impress the new manager. And after that game, that was the first time I thought getting promoted this season doesn't look very likely at all, especially when we're 1 point above the relegation zone.
I definitely agree with that. It was a bit of a reality check for me, to be honest. And a point that my brother actually brought up to me at the game was most of these players, whether they are or not in terms of quality, in their mind, they are Premier League footballers.
Yeah.
Or Premier League quality, Jedinak, Elphick, Chester, Bakuna, Champions League. Kodja probably wants to move on to the Premier League. Gested's a Premier League player. Grealish thinks he's a Premier League player. There's so many out there, and why can't they deliver? Why can't they step up and put the effort in?
Well, I'm gonna stop you there, Chad, because what I'm going to say to you is that I think that the key thing is that you said, I mean, Grealish, it's in his head.
Yeah, that is true.
You just ran off a list of players who I'd remove perhaps some of the players who we purchased from what I'm about to say. But, we actually look like a pretty average Championship team. We're drawing a lot of games. I think as the club, in how we're set up as a, to approach games, I think that we're really set up to not lose. I think we've come down, take last season off the books. I think we've got this ingrained approach to football of don't lose, don't lose, don't lose, survive. And that's not going to do us in the Championship. We've got teams who are arriving, look at the way it's gone. They beat us 1 week, they lose to Barnsley the next, then they beat Rotherham and then they lose to... It's crazy when you look through the mainstay of the Championship results.
Wolves are like the best example of what the Championship is. It's
a perfect example.
I think, as I said before, if there was a three-sided coin, such a thing, you just flip that to get the Wolves result.
And we need to really... We've got a great opportunity with a new manager, particularly a manager who's got experience of getting promoted out of this division, of redefining ourselves a little bit. What is our purpose? Is it to turn up and if we're not winning after an hour to just give up? I mean, what is the point? These are really well-paid, allegedly talented footballers who, between them, haven't over 12 league games now. It's a lot of football.
Do you mainly think it's down to effort then? Because if you look at the likes of Burton's probably the best example you get that are quite close to us and have come up from League One. They haven't got much quality in their ranks, have they? But they've surprised everyone because of the amount of effort they've put in. They've come beaming into it.
A few people have pinpointed this losing mentality and the fact that, we should get sports psychologists in. And, I'm sure there is some of that in the actual backroom set up at Villa Park anyway. But I don't think it's a losing mentality. Let's be honest, we've only lost three games this season. I think the fact is, and I think I've mentioned this before, on paper, once you spend 55 million or whatever it is, and you buy like the best three goal scorers in the league or with previous records in the Championship, you buy a Jedinak, you buy Elphick and Chester, mainly because of their character. On paper, it all looks good. On paper, other managers and pundits are saying, oh, Villa should get promoted because it's, you know, it's all there. And I think that's trickled down to the players and they're thinking, well, you know, with these guys with me, you know, we're going up. And then in their head, the job is done, but they haven't actually done the job.
Mm.
And I think that's half the in terms of the mental problem, is they've already assumed they're going to get promoted. Well, they did. Maybe they've had a reality check now. But I think they thought it was done and dusted just because of the money spent and the kind of caliber of players they got in. But without the effort and without... Di Matteo, I think, was a bit of a... As his reputation at West Brom was a casual manager who, you know, would check out at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. You know, he was out of there and he was kind of infrequent on the training ground as well and didn't really have his... footprint all over that team. It, you know, that rubs off onto the players, this kind of laissez-faire approach where it's kind of casual because you think, well, we're too good for this league, so, you know, we'll get promoted at the end of the season. But when teams like Burton and Huddersfield are giving it their all, whatever their resources, you know, it's 11 against 11, and if you've got 11 players well organized, well drilled, with a lot of fights, they're going to take down the Harlem Globetrotters. Well, we'll see what Bruce does. I mean, I think it is a big job, and I think even in his head now, because I still think, you know, because of these players, I, you know, still think that if he gets strings a few wins together, as long as he's top 10 or so come the turn of the year, then that's obviously it's going to set him up once a bit of momentum's found to you know, hit the playoffs. But I can't see us catching the top two even now, because as well as a team that have only won one game suddenly going on some kind of super run, those two top teams have got to drop points, and they're not going to drop that many.
Well, like you said, I think the next few months are probably the most vital part of Bruce's job or objective, is that if he gets us to January and gets us in and around those sort of upper mid-table places where we're not too far from a shout from a playoff spot then.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
With a new midfielder in, or a few signings coming in, then perhaps we can properly push on then.
Well, we'll cross that bridge when we get to it. Let's take some questions from the listeners. The first one, I think we'll give this one to Mr. Dan. Is it Richie Lauridson from somewhere that's very like Aston, San Diego, also known for its beaches, parks, beautiful climate? Should, and it touches on what we've just spoken about, should Bruce bring in a sports psychologist?
If we don't already have one, I don't see the harm in doing it. I think Bruce's job's perhaps simpler than that, and that's to get us playing football, you know, get us doing the straightforward basic things that we see other teams bringing to Villa Park when we go away. Let's start creating chances. Let's give ourselves a chance.
I think that's answered that one. John Wilson on Facebook says, will Bruce give Gabby a chance, or does he have sense like the rest of us villains? What do you think about that, Chad?
I know he's obviously said that he might reintroduce Gabby or have a look at him, but I think it's unrealistic because of the fact that we can't even choose which strikers to start now out of the options we've got. So I probably can't see Gabby returning now.
You do know where he's going to return, don't you?
Blues.
It will inevitably be St Andrews. It will inevitably be St Andrews. He'll be wheeled out like Hannibal Lecter, albeit a large version, and unleashed for his injury time.
Surely it would take an injury crisis of monumental proportions for that to happen.
I can't see it. Down this road a million times just in the last couple of seasons?
Well, that's because we've had so many changes of manager who have all banished him. And I don't know, it's a media thing that, you know, they start off because it's the obvious conversation, because there are still in a fan base some Gabby lovers, and so the media knows they can get a ruse from them, and then people start asking that same question.
As soon as a new manager comes in, they should just show him that Sky Sports clip where Gary Neville talks about how he only had 3 touches. Do you remember that? Just show them that.
No, exactly. Anyway, and the next question, this is off Twitter. The previous Di Matteo fitness coach, is it Marchese? Did Marchese have complete control over fitness, or does the manager heavily influence any program? Well, without obviously being a fly on the wall at Villa Park, obviously the reason why a fitness coach comes in is they obviously draw up the plan. And I would imagine the conversation with any manager is if there's any particular thing they want to focus on. I don't know, for example, if they're planning on playing on the counter-attack a lot, obviously there'd be a bit of acceleration training and things like that just to cater it to the way they want to play. But I think in terms of nailing down the main fitness program, it's very much down to the fitness guy. So that was Jay off Twitter. Another question, Nigel Dawson on Facebook asks, are the players ever going to put in more effort on the pitch than the fans do in the stadium, Chad?
No, move on.
I don't think so either.
No.
In any football ground in the world, no yes. one is ever going to put in more effort.
It's not just a Villa problem, it's football per se.
Yeah.
Right, moving on to the next question. From Matthew Mansfield off Twitter. Considering, I think this basically refers to the problems in midfield that every fan knows about, and obviously we've been talking about on most episodes of this show. Should we look at recalling the likes of Veretout and Sanchez from loans, given how short we are in central midfield, Dan?
That's a good question.
Are we assuming that we can? Because I think they're season-long loans. So, those two guys were... Basically, they wanted to get them out, as in sell them. And I think it's basically you're there for a season and they've paid a fee for that.
Hypothetically, would we want them back? I look at them both and I can think of maybe one reason to have them back and then two or three, why not?
Yeah.
Would they improve us?
For me, it's a complete no. Because number one, Sanchez just looks like a headless chicken in any English league. And we're talking about intensity. He was probably the worst for it.
Yeah, but if Villa somehow qualified for the Copa America, I would Sanchez would be the first name on the team sheet.
And then Veretout, we need people to stand up, and he was the person who hid all season.
Yeah,
Carles Hill, however, if we get him down the gym, that creative spark.
I think this is another example of which seems to manifest itself in some Villa fans is this habit of looking backwards when things aren't going, when the future looks a bit dodgy. So I think the answers to the midfield will come in January, and we're just going to kind of make do until then. There was a couple of questions on Facebook. One from Luke Seal. When are we going to stop fucking booing? I think that refers to fans. And also Matthew Parrish on Facebook. When will we win a game? Well, I think when we win a game, that's when the booing will stop. But also, what we've all spoken about, come on. I find it hard to accept people banging on about fans booing when we've had, how many years of dross have we had? And how many times have fans had a chance to see Villa win at Villa Park over the last couple of seasons, or even more than that? I think if the players put the effort in, you don't get the boos. For example, Newcastle, they were going to get lynched at the end of that game until the last 20 minutes of effort, which, Villa fans were kind of skipping out of the ground at the end of that. But when it's reversed and it's the second half that's a load of crap, you're going to expect boos. I don't see why people complain about that. It's kind of common sense. It's going to happen. What do you think?
The performance against Wolves was on an individual basis unacceptable, and I think I didn't personally boo, but I can get why people were booing, because it was rubbish. People weren't booing Bruce; they were booing the fact that what they'd been served up over 90 minutes was at times effortless. And I think there was one interesting thing, particularly during the game, was when Westwood appeared on the touchline and came on. There was definitely some booing from the crowd, and that I don't get that. I can see why people might be frustrated to see him. You know, I'm no advocate of Westwood, but the guy's running onto the pitch. You know what? It's not going to help matters, is it?
Having Westwood in the squad just indicates how, you know, weak the squad is. It's not a reason to kind of berate him. And as you say, any player coming on as, you know, he's coming on to play for Villa, it's hard to give him any more confidence or inspire him to do that by, you know, booing him as he comes on.
I've never booed personally myself either, but...
No, I mean, I've booed at the end of a game if it's actually wasted my time and a few over 30,000 time, and it's just an insult from what you've seen, you know, in terms of effort. But let's not forget, this is not a case of, oh, it's a clean slate now and, you know, give Bruce a chance. It's almost got nothing to do with Bruce now. This has been going on and on and on, and it needs fixing. It's the players have got to take some responsibility now. I think it started the last show with Doug Ellis quote where he says players get managers sacked. While that's not entirely true, I mean, I think it is in this case of Di Matteo, a big percentage of that. You know, I'll be honest, I prefer Bruce than Di Matteo.
It certainly makes more sense now in the situation we're in and the task that lies ahead, really. I think if there's one reassuring thing with having Bruce is that hopefully he'll be able to stabilise us, because this season has the potential to go one or two ways, I think.
Yeah.
Under Di Matteo, I think it would have been anyone's guess how things could have turned out. I really do.
Hello, hello, my British chums. This is Remy. Steve, Monsieur Bruce. I say no. Stay away from the light. It's a trap. A big, grand trap. Oui, it is a well-compensated trap, but a trap nonetheless. Jordan, more sun cream for my thighs.
Let's move on to the segment of the show, Improvers, where we look at one player, where we discuss how they can improve, if they can improve, or if they're just a lost cause. This week, we'll look at Ross McCormack, who started off promising, when the season kicked off, but seems to be an increasingly marginalised player at the moment. I mean, against Wolves, as we mentioned, there was a sparks of good link-up between him and Grealish, which I've always thought was potential key to this season, and you know, that kind of after a 5 minutes spell that kind of disappeared. Would you have him as the first choice, one of the first choice strikers in the starting 11?
Yeah, 100%. I feel like he's probably our best and most creative attacker, and technically probably the best player we've got at the football club as well. He should be scoring more goals, but I think because of the positions we've put him in, and because of, I don't know, it just feels like, I said when I was first talking at the start of the game, he was making runs and he was getting into positions. It just feels like no one else was sort of on the same wavelength as him. And then him and Grealish started to link up a bit more then. But yeah.
If I gave my team talk to Villa, I would say get the ball to McCormack as quickly as possible and then make runs to give him options. And, you know, you start from there, I think, really.
Look at the chance that Kodja and Adoma had the chance to pass him the ball. And if he scores there, we're completely talking about something else, aren't we? And he's in that position, so...
I think that's the great piece of defence for McCormack, that if you're him, you're coming in at full time saying, look, I've made the runs, I've tried the link-up play. When he was in, he was stood off Codger's shoulder and for some reason he chose to shoot rather than put him one-on-one with a goalkeeper. You know, you can't legislate for that, because he'll train all week, he'll work with them and he'll say, well, do you know what, I've made a couple of chances and I was free when you should have passed to me. You know, he'll be judged on his goal return. But, you know, I think he's working really hard. But he's another example of a player who we're not actually using him very well.
Yeah, just to cap this off, it's quite interesting to look at the odds to be the top championship scorer. I mean, I think Dwight Gale's on 9 at the moment. I think he's 7-4. But in terms of the three, let's say the 20 goal a season strikers that Villa got, McCormack's actually the most fancied at 25-1, Gusted's at 33-1, and Codger's at 40-1. How many has McCormack scored? Has he scored one? I can't remember. I know Gusted's got 3, Codger's got 2. But just one of those needs a hat trick, and you know, they're off to the races, so they're pretty good odds, actually. But at the moment...
So only Villa could sign 3 strikers who scored 20 goals a season and turn them into sub-10 goal scorers. We've got a particular penchant for that, haven't we?
Right, so meanwhile in the rest of the Championship, looking at what else is happening, and I think it's pretty obvious, isn't it, Dan? The main thing that's happened is there's been some kind of establishment in the top two.
Yeah, Norwich and Newcastle win again. There's no great surprise there, I don't suppose, you know, that, other than the fact that, I mean, Norwich beat Rotherham, which, you know, I would expect. Newcastle beat Brentford, I'd expect that. I mean, they're looking like the 1-2, aren't they, at the moment? And yeah. Huddersfield lost, so they've dropped off.
I think, I mean, I tweeted earlier on that we can, after the Wolves game, we can kiss goodbye to automatic promotion. Mm-hmm. And for Villa to get automatic promotion, you're looking at a team that has managed to win once in 12 games, going on one hell of a winning run. And we're talking about like winning 9 or 10 games on the trot. But at the same time, Newcastle and Norwich suddenly tripping over in a severe way. And I mean, okay, Newcastle lost their first two games, but you know, they've only been beaten once in 10 games since. And I don't think those two teams are really going to squander that. I mean, Huddersfield, I think they would be happy if they were in the playoffs this season.
Well, Norwich and Newcastle are starting to do the thing that we mentioned early doors in the season, yeah, where we were saying, well, no one's really found their feet. Now Norwich and Newcastle are starting to go, right, win, 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 win. It's like, we're away from that, aren't we, at the moment? Yeah.
Newcastle and Norwich. Newcastle and Norwich are going, okay, boys, let's wrap this up by Christmas.
Well, we're hoping we might win away from home by Christmas. Our aspirations are aligned slightly differently.
It's true, though. I mean,
it is true.
I mean, I'm still thinking, as we discussed, you know, get up to the top 10 by Christmas and then playoffs, you know, it's on. But equally at the moment, I mean, Jesus.
Now it's time for Twitter with Tony. October 16th. I have bought several companies in crisis before and turned it right. The difference was before getting the right CEO for them. I could do it myself. October 16th. Still, football today is evolving so quickly in many aspects. Even you aren't falling, would soon be behind. Continuous developments are needed. Why? It's still October 16th. There is old saying, bells are everywhere, but not the same as the eyes. Good manager should know how to make it.
Let's move on to the next games. Villa's games are pretty tough. Reading away. They haven't been beaten at home, and hopefully when you're listening to this, they have been. But Fulham, what's Fulham's form away from home?
They've been unbeaten away from home as well. I think they're the only team in the league.
So
looking good.
Potentially two draws there to add to the big pile. I mean, let's look at the Fulham game. Anything else worth talking about, Chad?
It's got to be 3 points, really, hasn't it? 100%. If we don't win that game, or if we don't get at least 3 points out of those two next games from a win, then you're saying playoffs is starting to look a bit faded as well, aren't you?
Well, I'm thinking attendances might start to drop as well, yeah, like big time, because there'll be people essentially... I mean, already there's a lot of fans who've bought tickets away... for away games, just to return them, basically just to get their...
client references.
Yeah. Their client references for the Blues game. Once that game's out of the way, zero interest. Mm. So if they lose against Fulham, I think that's a bigger game than this Wolves one, because obviously manager's first game, you know, you cut him some slack. But this game, you'll know he's in a quagmire if he doesn't win that. Because, I mean, let's face it, Villa have got to start winning soon. And we're talking about getting in the top 10 for December in touching distance of the playoffs, and well, it's almost coming up to the second half. Well, it's the second half of October already.
I mean, when do we start having the discussion, and without wanting to be prophets of doom here, when do we start having the discussion that where are we going to finish this season? Because we're 20th. I mean, we're out of the drop zone by a point. We've won one game. We were abject against Wolves. Not exactly bringing positivity to the podcast here, am I?
No, but I mean, I'm just clinging on to the fact that we've got players who, if somebody said, oh, Villa are going to go on a 9-game winning run, even though based on what's happened so far and also what happened last season, you think, yeah, right. It's also possible because you look at our strike force and you think, well, yeah, and you know, the rest of the league's not that hot. It's just they're a bit more up for it. They haven't got the quality there.
We just need to start winning games. We just need to start winning games. It's not... Football isn't complicated, and I wonder whether, you know, it is easy to complicate it.
It is very easy. I mean, fitness. No, just fucking win the game.
Just put the ball in the back of the net.
I don't care who the manager is.
I'd be really concerned if we didn't go to, you know, we didn't have Fulham at Villa Park and we didn't, you know, really get at them because if, you know, with all due respect to the Fulhams of this league, if we're not going to be turning teams like that over on our own pitch, and there's been a fair few of them already this term, but that, you know, that's gone. We can't do nothing about that. Yeah. Where are these wins going to start coming from? Because we need to start... Yeah, we're undefeated at home, and that's almost like a tongue-in-cheek statistic that people are banding around at
well,
the moment.
I mean...
We need to start winning.
We'll use that as a segue to go into five reasons to be cheerful, and, you know, that would be number one. We are still unbeaten at home. That could actually, that just that fact, if we carried on being unbeaten but actually started winning a few games, mm-hmm. it actually helps the players mentally because they've got something to hang on to. Suddenly, if they're 1-0 up and they're thinking about their record, or if it's 0-0 or 1-1, and we're going into the last 5 minutes, they're focused even more because they want to maintain that unbeaten home record. Mm. So it's psychologically, it's going to help, but obviously we want to be turning draws into wins. And I'd love, I mean, if I could have anything this season apart from promotion, and I hope it's promotion and this thing, and that's essentially after what's happened over the last few seasons with the record amount of home losses, I think 10 was the maximum, is to remain unbeaten at Villa Park this season, which, having fended off Newcastle, which would be the main threat to puncture that record, you know, we're all set for that. Mm-hmm. Right. Second reason to be cheerful. Anybody?
I'll take this one. It's the fact that the second half probably helped Bruce identify a lot of the problems already.
What, like we're crap?
Well, yeah, for instance. There you go. Straight up.
Ending his resignation on the hour.
That's a positive.
He was going, he was get me Remy's number. He was right. It's a trap. It's a fucking trap.
Because of this rolling contract, you never know. He might resign before the Fulham game.
So, thanks, but no thanks.
You know, you'll just be thinking, thanks for that, lads. I've now got on my CV, manager of a former European champion. Thanks for that. Gives me a bit of kudos on my CV. Number three, well, it has to be that we didn't appoint McLaren, although that was never likely. I feel sorry for Derby fans, though. I mean, obviously.
It's a dreadful, dreadful, dreadful appointment for them.
Although they did win. They did win.
But we, you know, we don't meddle in such things as wins.
I don't know. It'd be interesting to see if they finish higher than Villa. I mean, that was always going to be interesting anyway, just because of the Nigel Pearson factor earlier on. But I can't see it if Bruce sorts this team out. Number four?
Being out of the relegation zone helps. I think that's a mental thing as well.
I think that was a bit of a shock to people before that game. Obviously, our game kicked off after the 3 o'clocks, and then you looked up and you saw Villa in the bottom three.
That's certainly a shock for me.
After 12 games. And
it's a wake-up call.
Yeah. You're like, oh my God.
Seriously, it's absolutely serious. And that's the thing. We've been so preoccupied with discussing, you know, why didn't we win this game? Why didn't we win that game? When actually, just bigger picture, people.
We just need a run of 3 or 4 games to get in the promotion places. No, you know, you just need another 3 games of losing and drawing to be in the bottom 3.
League table doesn't lie. We've been that poor at times.
Yeah. Talking of the Norwich and Newcastle thing, I think I put up a tweet about, there's one thing that rattles me, and that's people who, when Villa get knocked out of cups, say, oh, we can concentrate on the league now. And, you know, managers that even set Villa up to get knocked out of cups. And I'm, you know, looking at Gerard Houllier against Manchester City in the FA Cup, and obviously more infamously, Martin O'Neill against CSK Moscow. Mm-hmm. That was essentially a sacrifice so we could battle for top 4, and then the next league game with our fresh team, we're playing Stoke and we're 2-0 up and we concede 2 goals in the dying minutes to throw away 2 points. Newcastle and Norwich, both in the top 2 while still being in the League Cup in the final 16.
Sorry to bring him up, but look at when Sherwood kept us up. We went on a cup run.
Exactly. It's momentum. It's all about winning is a habit, and you have to get it somewhere and start somewhere. And cup runs sometimes you know, provide a good catalyst, because that's, when I say winning is a habit, it's a habit that Villa haven't had for a long, long time, and they must discover it somehow.
Absolutely.
So the fifth and final reason to be cheerful, anybody?
Bruce's hair, tan and weight loss. There's hope for us all. He's a beautiful specimen.
Beautiful. Beautiful.
Especially his fresh tracksuit.
Do you think that's why you can talk about fitness now? I mean, of all the people to roll that excuse out, there was a bit of irony there. I must have...
I think it was quite ironic that Bruce arrived. Do you remember when Lambert reappeared a couple of months after having left Villa and he was like a... like he'd been...
Regenerated.
Yeah, I was talking to someone before the game, actually. I was talking about exactly the same thing. They said it was like he'd been to some sort of post-Villa treatment that they have to go, like, I forget, what was it, Stargate, where they had to used to lie in that sort of regeneration booth, if you like, and they become like a brand new being. And, you know, they appear with skin and tans and their hair's regrown and their testicles have dropped and it's, you know, and they suddenly want to manage under the Venkies. But anyway, the point I'm making is Bruce has arrived in that condition, so it'd be interesting to see the decline over the coming weeks.
Jesus.
It will, but it's inevitable, you know. When it is inevitable, he'll look as haggard as the rest of us after a couple of weeks, propped up in his new... You know, the only reason they've moved the dugout closer to the tunnel is so he's got less to stagger at half-time as people pelt him with pies and go, you fucking blue-nosed bastard, we knew we should have entrusted you with our club that was on the up.
on the slow up.
We'll go, someone get us Trevor Francis. Do you remember when Graeme Souness, when he was manager, was it Galatasaray or Besiktas, when they won the derby, ran on with a flag
yeah.
and caused a riot? I hope Bruce does that at St Andrews.
Actually,
I hope he runs on.
I hope he does Paolo Di Canio-esque and just slides on his knees in front of their biggest stand, if they have a big stand.
I think he did that against Villa, I think.
When God, no.
But no, I think if I was Steve Bruce's PR guy, I'd be going, right, Brucey, let's squash this ex-blue nose resistance crap. Here's the flag. Half-time.
It just so happens to be a Chinese flag.
Yeah.
But it's a flag.
If we're 1-0 up, yeah, who needs a Villa flag? Just use a Chinese flag. If we're 1-0 up at half-time, just ram it right in the middle of that centre circle. Don't wait until full-time. Half-time, get it in there. just to liven up the second half.
I claim this ground for Recon Group.
If you have any questions for us to answer, it can be anything on Aston Villa, the world of football at large, your own personal problems.
Just don't ask Dan about Westwood.
Just drop us a tweet on @AstonVillaPod and we'll be sure, if it's a good one, to include it in the next episode. Also, if you enjoyed the podcast, please give us a thumbs up, a like, a five stars, whatever, just to...
Stick a thumb up us.
Show your love. It's coming up to Christmas. We need some love just to keep this damn show going. Anyway, until next time, it's goodbye from me and goodbye from them.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
My old man said...
I'm back in work. I've been out for 3-4 months. It's the first time in 40 years that I haven't been involved with a football club on the first day of a season. And I found that remarkably strange. Yeah, I've got to be really careful, but I do believe it's arguably the biggest club that I've ever managed. And I mean that properly. And the biggest challenge of all because of the expectation. You know, this club is steeped in history of winning things. So the expectation is always still going to be there. So I hope I can live up to the billing.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.